We've seen the recent coronation of a king, and while Charles III has been waiting 70 years for just this occasion, I was agog at all the pomp and ceremony that remained in his new pared-down service. What I've actually discovered is that there's a book addressing all the traditions required for a coronation service, but more on that later. What I was even more interested in was the embroidery, and there was an abundance of it, from headpieces to gowns, shirts, robes, sword belts, gauntlets, and even the Queen's shoes. What a celebration of British designers and British craftsmanship, and after weeks of speculation, royal watchers must have been enthralled with what they saw as the King and Queen, along with the Prince and Princess of Wales, stepped out of their lavish carriages. A coronation is a ritualistic, symbolic, and ceremonial event. It's the pinnacle of pomp and circumstance, requiring ensembles befitting such a magnificent event, able to hold their own alongside that extremely grand backdrop of Westminster Abbey. And the coronation regalia forms a key part of that ceremony, representing the powers and responsibilities of the monarch. It gave us all a rare opportunity to see everything from spectacular horse-drawn coaches, yeomen of the guard, military regalia, but also the small, meaningful acts many practiced since 1066 that, when joined together, formed this vast spectacle. But for me, the grand spectacle was the fine embroidery, both past and present, because while much focus was given to the outfits worn by Queen Camilla, Catherine, the Princess of Wales, and even her daughter, Princess Charlotte, King Charles was robed in even more luscious embroidery, much of it reused from the past. English coronations are meant to be brimming with pomp and pageantry. That's how previous kings displayed their wealth and power, after all. And even though this was meant to be a pared-down, more modern version of Elizabeth II's coronation from 1953, this recent event certainly delivered in terms of the main players, the King and Queen, as well as the future King and Queen in waiting. All the people who are, after all, the main focus of this entire celebration. So, Stitch Safari listeners, in this episode, I want to focus on the embroidery used on the gowns, shirts, shoes, and headdresses, along with the rich display of symbolism that will go down in history as being both fashionable, respectful, patriotic, and utterly beautiful. Not always an easy combination to achieve. So let's see what I can uncover. Hello and welcome to the Stitch Safari podcast, a sprightly and upbeat expedition into the alluringly appealing ambrosial world of stitch history, art, and embroidery. Each fortnight we'll trek through and discover the utilitarian, the decorative, the quirky, and the just plain fun world that is the art of the needle. My name's Cathy Jack Copeland, and I'm the Stitch Safari Expedition Leader. I'm an Australian textile artist, teacher, judge, blogger, and stitch enthusiast whose work in contemporary machine stitch became my business. I'm going to begin with King Charles III, and I have to say how disappointed I was, certainly at the commentary I listened to, that took little opportunity to focus in on the spectacle that was the embroidery. Charles's focus on sustainability and efficiency was there for all to see, shown through the reuse of many of the royal robes and garments. although some of the vestments worn by King Charles on arrival were obscured by his robe, we did glimpse the red robe of state worn by his grandfather in 1937 and conserved by the Royal School of Needlework, with the lining and gold lace conserved by Ede and Ravenscroft. During the ceremony, a rather solemn and vulnerable moment, I thought, occurred when Charles, after divesting himself of the earthly symbols of status, was shown wearing a simple white linen tunic. And I believe it was the same tunic worn by his grandfather George VI during his coronation in 1937, symbolising purity and the shedding of vanity to stand before God. And I did glimpse some very delicate embroidery around the cuffs on that very simple garment. He was then enrobed after the anointing in a super tunica and a mantle ready for the investiture. This lay garment, the super tunica, was made in 1911 for the coronation of King George V and his wife Queen Mary, and was subsequently worn by Charles's grandfather, King George VI, and Queen Elizabeth II at their crowning ceremonies. It features gold work techniques and embroidery created by the Ladies' Work Society. It's a long gold coat fastened at the waist with a sword belt and was based on designs from medieval coronations and other religious vestments. The coronation sword belt, also known as the girdle, was wrapped around the super tunica and fastened at the king's waist by the jewelled sword of offering. Again, Charles chose to reuse the same sword belt worn by his grandfather during his ceremony in 1937 that features cloth of gold, red silk, goldwork embroidery and a gold buckle and clip. Worn over the super tunica was the imperial mantle, very much like a robe composed of cloth of gold, gold, silver and silk thread, silk, gold bullion fringe held together with a gold clasp. This robe was made for George IV in 1821, replete with embroidered symbols of the British nation and the royal family, including eagles, roses, foliage, crowns, fleur-de-lis, thistles and shamrocks embroidered in a variety of coloured threads, and is amongst the oldest of the coronation vestments. Now, what I found fascinating was the coronation glove, also known as the gauntlet, worn on Charles' right hand to hold the sovereign's scepter as he's crowned. Again, this was reused from his grandfather's 1937 coronation and is made up of white leather, gilt metal thread embroidery, featuring the national emblems of the Tudor rose, thistle, shamrock, oak leaves and acorns. Embroidered onto the back of the glove's hand is a ducal coronet in red velvet above the coat of arms of the Duke of Newcastle. Now we come to that magnificent garment, the robe of estate, worn as Charles left Westminster Abbey, and weighing close to 7 kilograms, this 6.5-metre long purple velvet robe echoes that majestic imperial aesthetic of ancient Rome, trimmed with Canadian ermine and an elegant repeating goldwork embroidery pattern featuring ears of wheat symbolising peace and plenty. So, how do they know or remember the order of use of the many garments required during a coronation? Sam Montgomery, writing for Tatler, notes that the order in which the sacred garments are meticulously applied during the ceremony abides by the dictations of the 14th century Liber Regalis, or Royal Book, an ornate manuscript published for the coronation of King Richard II and his first wife Queen Anne of Bohemia in 1377. It stretches to 34 pages and is preserved in the Westminster Abbey Library. Now, that's not bad to have an instruction book on how to organise and run a coronation dating from 1377. Next, let's look at Queen Camilla, and I thought her ivory coat dress embellished with gold and silver metallic thread embroidery was outstanding. The fabric was woven by Stephen Walters in Suffolk, and the gown was designed by Bruce Oldfield, one of her favourite couturiers. But it's the unexpected symbolism that I find so interesting here. Did you notice any of them? Embroidered near the hem of her gown were the names of her close family, including her children Tom and Laura, as well as her grandchildren Gus, Freddie, Louis, Eliza and Lola. But what I find totally endearing were the two gold terrier dogs embroidered onto the gown, representing Charles and Camilla's rescue dogs, Beth and Bluebell. And while Charles's garments were full of traditional symbolism, Camilla was able to follow her own inclinations a little more, I think, carrying the names of her loved ones on one of the biggest occasions of her life, along with her two much-loved and lovable rescue dogs. And how refreshing is that? Her matching embroidered shoes were made by British designer Elliot Zed from the same silk fabric as her dress. As per tradition, Camilla wore two robes of estate during the coronation. One upon arrival was the crimson robe of estate worn by Queen Elizabeth II, for whom it was originally made in 1953. The new robe of estate worn as she left the abbey was made by Eden Ravenscroft and designed and embroidered by the Royal School of Needlework, for whom Camilla is a patron, matching the purple velvet used in King Charles's robe of estate. The gold embroidery features the Queen's cipher along with a bounty of floral emblems, one for each of the four nations making up the United Kingdom, the rose, the thistle, the daffodil and the shamrock, the same emblems that featured heavily in the official invitation. But the embroidery also featured the King's favourite flower, delphiniums, along with a nod to the late Queen Elizabeth's love of Lily of the Valley, a flower also included in Camilla's 2005 wedding bouquet. And just to keep the eyes busy, there were also daisy chains, forget-me-nots, calendine and scarlet pimpernel, lady's mantle, myrtle, maidenhair fern and cornflowers. Bees and beetles were also used, a reflection of the couple's regard for the natural world, but also in line with the imagery depicting flowers and insects used on the official invitation. And I'm going to finish with Catherine, the Princess of Wales. Catherine's Alexander McQueen dress was a little difficult to see, as it was often hidden by her voluminous, eye-catching blue and red ceremonial robe, thought to have been worn at the request of King Charles, representing the colours of the Union Jack flag and symbolising her position as a Dame Grand Cross of the Royal Victorian Order. But there were glimpses of the shimmering gown worn underneath, captured by clever photographers. Made of ivory silk crepe, the dress featured metal thread embroidery using silver bullion incorporating the floral emblems of the four nations of the United Kingdom, the English rose, the Scottish thistle, the Welsh daffodil and the Irish shamrock, worked in what looks like a very traditional design along and around the hem of her beautiful gown, as well as around the edges of the sleeves. The exact same flowers that were worked onto her wedding dress in 2011, designed by Sarah Burton. Symbolic dressing has become Catherine the Princess of Wales' métier, but this was definitely a power moment for her, her new title and a new way of dressing. That headpiece, though, was a fashion showstopper. No tiaras necessary on this occasion in the hands of milliner Jess Collette and Alexander McQueen, apparently the first collaboration between the designer and the well-known fashion house. Nearly every royal and aristocratic woman wore a tiara at the Queen's coronation 70 years previously. But things have changed, and changed for the better, in my opinion. Benjamin Wilde, cultural historian and royal dress expert, notes that it was significant that tiaras were not worn by the royal family. He went on to say that dispensing with coronets was a nod to make the monarchy more relevant and more modern. Yet, in my opinion, they were not missed at all, as the silver and crystal headpiece worn by Catherine, the Princess of Wales, was a pared-down version for Princess Charlotte, were absolute showstoppers. A defining moment was when Catherine stepped out of her carriage. The sheer elegance and simplicity created by designer Jess Collette and Alexander McQueen was breathtaking. Working as a couture milliner for the past 25 years, Collette received a life-changing loan from the King Charles Prince's Trust, charity that supports young people struggling with work or school. How appropriate, then, that Jess Collette collaborated with the McQueen Fashion House to produce this magnificent headpiece. This glittering floral headpiece was stunning, simple, elegant, and oh so appropriate for this hugely special occasion. It complemented her entire outfit perfectly, matching with the striking, shimmering embroidery on her gown. The nature-inspired design also honoured King Charles' love of nature and gardening. It was a perfect tribute. The headpiece hugged the top of Catherine's carefully pulled back updo hairstyle, finishing delicately at the tips of her ears. It appears to have been worked along two rows of wires, the leaves standing more upright as they came together at the top of the headpiece, then laying flatter as they merged to sit perfectly on her dark hair at the sides. Made of silver bullion, crystals and silver threadwork, this nature-inspired three-dimensional leaf-embroidered headdress was the perfect addition to the elegant simplicity of her coronation gown. If ever there was a flower crown fit for a princess who will one day become queen, then this is definitely it. It was ethereal, regal, and elegantly stylish. Princess Charlotte's dress, also designed by Alexander McQueen, featured an ivory silk cape embroidered with flowers representing the four nations of the UK. It was simple, elegant, and appropriate for an 8-year-old child, along with a smaller version of the headpiece worn by her mother. So, if you wish to use symbolism in your embroidery, look no further than the coronation for inspiration. Use it to express, imply, represent, and personify your design work. The coronation encapsulates history, going back 9 centuries to the coronation of William the Conqueror in 1066 in the very same Westminster Abbey. There's the homage to nationhood using the flower of each nation making up the United Kingdom. There's personal tokens such as the love of a particular flower and passion for the natural world. But we also see new inclusions such as personal representations on Queen Camilla's gown in the form of her children's and grandchildren's names, as well as the King and Queen's 2 rescued dogs. Symbolism is a powerful tool in your design arsenal, and the coronation of King Charles III was a great chance to see it all working together to tell a story that surely will be remembered in many people's hearts. It was history unfolding before our very eyes. And the embroidery was simply stunning. As always, thank you so much for your time. I love having you here and it's truly appreciated. Tell your friends to tune in and subscribe, and let's make 2023 the best year ever. Stitch Safari's now reached over 12,000 downloads, and that's all thanks to you. And I'm extremely grateful. It's also been mentioned as one of the 20 best embroidery podcasts of 2021 by Warp Magazine, listed as one of the top shows about embroidery by Repod in 2022, and recorded in the top 5 textile industry podcasts you must follow in 2023 by Feedspot. Please leave a message and subscribe to the Stitch Safari podcast. There's just so much more to discover, and it's also fascinating. I do post interesting tidbits on Instagram and Facebook from time to time, as well as book reviews and a blog on the Stitch Safari website, so do head on over. Till the next exciting episode of Stitch Safari and our next inspiring adventure into stitch, embroidery and design. Bye for now.